Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Syrian rebels are a tiny step closer to a peace agreement that would strip Syrian President Bashar al-Assad of power. Yesterday in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, leaders of Syrian opposition groups called for a pluralistic regime to represent all sectors of the Syrian people. But President Assad and his aides first have to step aside, which remains highly unlikely. That means peace in Syria is still a distant reality. Syria's unrelenting civil war has killed 250,000 people since 2011. The flood of refugees from Syria far exceeds that and has created a migrant crisis with global ramifications. And now the country is home to the Islamic State, a terrorist network that has shocked the world with its depravity. Beirut-based journalist Thanasi Kambanis recently visited regime-controlled Syria. He's a fellow at the Century Foundation and the author of several books about the Middle East. Thanasi, welcome back to Here and Now.
Great to talk to you, Eric.
Let's step back a bit, Thanasi, and take a deeper look at the future of Syria, Iraq, and really the region now that 2015 comes to an end. I mean, earlier this year, you went to Syria to regime-controlled areas, still an incredibly difficult place for journalists to get to and to report from. What did you find there that may have changed your understanding of this crisis?
Well, there's a really bizarre sense of the clock having stopped somewhere in the 1960s or 70s when you step into regime-controlled Syria. The propaganda operation of Bashar al-Assad's regime, the way in which it still is trying to hold on to an absolute monopoly of dishonest manipulation and sort of denial of the barrel bombs and torture state, all these really crusty mechanisms of trying to maintain an old-fashioned authoritarian dictatorship seem really out of tune for 2015. We start with really small things like just outright denial of the fact that until recently the regime was losing the war, up to really big issues like the secular authoritarian dictatorship hasn't figured out a way to talk about how it wants to control a country that contains minorities but also religious Islamists. And we get to this sort of big historic arc of what's happening in the region, which is the Arab state system that came into being after the end of the colonial period in World War II has proven unable to serve its citizens. And it's set up a sort of horrible binary choice between secular dictatorships on one hand and Islamist extremist groups like the Islamic State on the other hand. And neither of these poles represent the vast majority of citizens. And yet, in a case like Syria's, the regime and the Islamic State have wiped out almost every force that is moderate or even just less extreme and located between these two poles. So we have a region that's still struggling to find avatars of the aspirations of the majority of its people.
You see this as a major historical realignment where the vital center is gone and people are drawn to either extreme, either re-embracing authoritarianism or drifting towards radical Islamist jihadism.
The Arab states like Bashar al-Assad or Hosni Mubarak's Egypt, or you could really pick your favorite offender, made a sort of dirty deal with their republics about half a century ago. They said, we're going to repress you, but we're going to deliver modernity and progress. And ultimately, they failed on their end of the deal. So people were oppressed, and they also started getting poorer, less healthy, less educated, and missing out what were supposed to be the benefits of this dictatorial trade-off. By design of these despots, the only viable opposition that was allowed to exist was extremist Islamists. And that self-fulfilling prophecy has led to a lot of destruction in the region. And yes, now we're witnessing a tug of war between these extremes, but the generational fight that we're just at the beginning of is one in which there's going to be a third pole, which might not be liberal or democratic, but is certainly not going to be something as extreme as the Islamic State. And that is, I wager, what's going to end up dominating the region at the end of this period of upheaval.
Thanasi, when you were in regime-controlled Damascus and other parts of Syria, did ordinary people speak to you over cups of tea in the quiet of their homes and tell you things that were illuminating about their views towards Assad? I mean, don't they see after so many years of horror that he has to go for any kind of solution to come about?
Well, I mean, there's sort of two major groups that haven't turned against the dictator, and one are the real diehard supporters of the old order. They're not a small group, and they're the ones who are, whether for ethnic reasons or because their wealth and well-being is tied to regime support, aren't going to abandon it. The other group that I think is the more interesting group, because they could shift, are folks like all the displaced Sunni Arabs and Palestinians that I spoke to, who are turned off by the sort of violence and extremism of the opposition groups, but they're in no way loyalists of the regime. What they like about regime-held Syria is that it's a place that has room for many sects, many ethnicities, and that welcomes people who are religious as well as people who aren't religious. Beyond that, they're abused victims of the regime, like many of the people in the opposition areas, and you could tell, and some of them actually were able to speak openly about this to me, that they are yearning for some alternative, someone to come and be willing to topple the regime, but not replace it with a fascist religious order.
For folks in Damascus, how close is the war? I mean, are they sitting at cafes and hearing the thud of artillery, or is it kind of a distant conflict going on still in the hinterlands?
The suburbs of Damascus, many of them are still in rebel hands. The period I was there in early October was relatively quiet, and relatively quiet means I would hear dozens of barrel bombs every night and more outgoing artillery than incoming. But there were several hits a night on the city and usually a dozen or so casualties ending up in Damascus hospitals. You realize when you drive around Damascus, and when you have to go around rebel-held areas to join the highway going north, that this really is a city that is surrounded by oppositionists, and that it's very tenuously held by the regime.
Hmm. As 2015 comes to a close, the news, as we've talked about, is pretty grim with the Islamic State, speaking of nihilism and violence, and also refugees and horror and barrel bombs. Is there anything that gives you a glimpse of hope, any rays of light there in Syria?
Well, the most positive thing about Syria is the one thing that's always been positive, which is the tremendous human capital and talent of its people. So sadly, today, a lot of the most promising Syrians have taken the refugee trail to Europe or laboring away in exile as activists or just trying to survive here in Lebanon, in Turkey, in refugee camps elsewhere. But there is an unbelievable amount of promise among this population, and it's a population that's become very politically awakened and mobilized over the course of this uprising. So we have a reservoir of politically savvy, educated, polyglot, skilled young people, young and middle-aged people, a lot of them with real technocratic experience. So in the very slim eventuality that Syria had a political transition, you'd be able to draw on a tremendous diaspora and population of recent emigrants just from the last 5 years who would have, I think, a better chance than maybe in any other Arab country of building a functional, creative, successful new political order. So if I were looking for a ray of hope for the next 5 years or for the next generation in Syria, it would be that.
A small sliver of light if the war ever comes to an end.
It will someday, but it might not be in the near term, in the couple of years that many of us hope.
Thanasi Kambanis joined us from Beirut. He's a journalist, author, and a fellow at the Century Foundation. Thanasi, thank you for speaking with us.
Great to be with you, Eric.